Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Futures Voices. My name is Zahra and I am mentoring team lead in BH Futures Foundation. In today's episode, we will be discussing various aspects of user experience design and examining the impact that recent developments in AI have had on this field. Today, our guest is Jeyka Hasler. With over 25 years in the digital space, Jeyka Hasler, initially a mixed media artist, transitioned into marketing and advertising, creating digital products across diverse industries. She excelled in collaboration and handcrafted products in ad agencies. In 2015, she shifted to user experiences, delving into full product development in agile environments. Jeyka contributed to SportTech, working on one of the first portable smart cameras for football footage. Today, she enhances fleet management using AI for insights. Jeyka's design work is driven by a passion for strong teams, collaboration, positive energy, and curiosity. Jeyka lives in Nebraska with husband Chris, sons Sam and Eli, and a very energetic beagle named Buster, and a lazy yellow cat, Charlie. Jeyka, welcome to Futures Voices.
Thanks so much, Zahra. I am excited to be here.
So for starters, I want to ask you to share a bit about your background and how did your design journey unfold?
Let me kind of start at the beginning. I was born and raised in Bosnia, and I grew up doing art, designing, cutting things out of paper, making paper dolls, painting, experimenting since early childhood. And it was very clear that's truly all I want to do and maybe all I can do. So I've been sticking on that path for a very long time. I think it's irrelevant to our conversation to recognize that the path was always the same, but then the tools that I used and environments I did it in kept changing. And sort of ability to diversify and learn has been a constant there. I came to the United States in 96, and then I got a degree in design and art from University of Nebraska. And then United States kind of went through a crisis after September 11th. I was working as an intern in an ad agency that did a lot of aircraft sort of marketing, advertising. So we lost a few big clients, and that was kind of my first sort of entry into tech and design and so on. I got laid off. That was the first lesson. I got laid off with a bunch of other of my coworkers. Also, that was the dot-com boom of 2001. I don't know if you remember, but tons of early internet businesses closed their doors and only a few survived, some of them actually being Amazon and Microsoft. So they and Apple kind of made it through the crisis of then. And then it was truly like ups and downs since then. I went back and got my master's in marketing and advertising. I realized I need to kind of speak the language and understand what's going on if I want to go back into advertising. Got my first job. I kind of entered through the back door, if you would. I actually taught myself to code in order to be hired as a UX designer. There's a lot of like stakes that were really, really positioned as graphic design and somebody who's really good at lettering and typography. And I was yet to learn that. I was coming more from very much a visual background. So I entered through the back door, learned how to code, learned how to write action script in Flash and created tons of Flash animations and slowly started dropping that developer title of my title and bringing the design title and kind of made a switch, I think probably in 2007, 2008. And then that sort of skeuomorphism was the thing in design. So like when you designed a website, it needed to look like the product. If you were, for example, advertising a golf course, you would create a literal golf course in your website and then have a user move through the whole thing sort of dynamically. It was very magical. That was very cool at the time. But we learned many lessons about usability since then. So obviously we don't do things that way anymore. So did a lot of that. I was a generalist when I first started, but as the world of tech got more complicated and mobile devices started popping up in like 2007, 2008, and then it was really clear like the apps are going to be the next most interesting thing. I started getting more and more specialized. I was still like interactive art director. There's still like a heavy design component, but then the rise of UX started really, really picking up in like 2010, 2011, 2012, and that those like jobs with those titles started sort of rolling in. By that time, I mean, where I live, I don't live on the coast. I don't live in Silicon Valley at all. So those are not that's not kind of the upfront things that were happening. But Nebraska has a really healthy entrepreneurship program, and university has been churning out a lot of talented people. So they all started businesses in locally and chose to stay in Nebraska and hire local talent. So as that kind of was happening, I started sort of looking around and seeing like, hey, who's doing something interesting locally? Can I get closer to the business? What marketing advertising sort of pegs you in is you are creating experiences to sell, but not to be used, not to be made with. Like, it's truly you're selling people instead of making for people. So a lot more stuff started popping up there. Things were getting complex and interesting. And I decided like I want to go full product, started learning more about UX, about processes, start learning about product management as well. I think designers, we need to speak languages of the people that we work with, learning more about like product marketing, and then agile development as well, and kind of understanding that iterative cycle, how different it is than from ad agencies where it's very much waterfall, and learned a lot about processes and so on. And then my sort of biggest latest project that I worked on was Huddle's Flex portable camera that's used to film what we call global football for American soccer. I know that's a divisive term, but basically used to film games. That took us about, 2.5 years, and I learned a lot about starting from basically nothing, and then building something out of it. And then currently, I am working at a company named Fleetio. They are one of the leaders in like fleet management software. They're just at the cusp of really, really embracing like modern software development, and then themselves innovating when it comes to AI in our products. So this is a very timely conversation because as a member of our 11-person team, we're all trying to understand and really up our knowledge in AI, kind of understand where is the right time to use these kinds of technologies versus something that already exists or it's a lot simpler. So a lot of learning happening for everybody in design right now. You're going to see that I don't have definite answer to these questions. It's just musings and thoughts. I don't think a lot of people really know what's going to come next, and we're all sort of building on what happened so far. So that's that in a nutshell.
I understand, and I do understand that AI is still a developing story. For our listeners that are not even familiar with UX design, could you provide a brief explanation of what it is and why it is significant in the design and development process?
Yes, absolutely. So I think this is also maybe my opinion too, but user experience is humanizing software to the endpoint user that's going to use whatever you created for them as a tool to do their job, or something that does job for them that they don't want to do, or something to like make them look like heroes to their team or bosses or whatever else. So we're basically making something that is complicated under the hood, has a lot of like endpoints that are being plugged in hardware world that was heavy constraints with the camera, the connection, the app, like how it all has to work with the cloud and so on, and hiding that complexity from a customer and user and really making something magical and simple for them. So I think that's the primary role of user experience. Now, what that kind of how that plays out really depends on the space you're in, on the company that you work for. How big is your team? Are you somebody wearing many hats and you kind of have to handle everything from beginning to an end, or do you specialize in one aspect of UX design, like content writing or UI design? So you can be heavily specialized in like one aspect of it, or you can handle everything end to end. Is sort of how I think about it. Now, the discipline is kind of matches all the steps you need to take, and I think that's kind of what we're going to be talking about next. But all the steps you kind of need to take to from something that's confusing ambiguous. There's a lot of unknowns. So something that's actually tangible, solves a problem, can be iterated on, and it gets tested in the market, and everything in between. Like, one big thing, and I think that this is truly like what you are realizing, or I guess two things that we're really realizing about UX design that are getting more and more important, especially with rise of AI doing maybe that lower level tasks, is UX designers' ability to do strategy, specifically business and product strategy. So understand like what kind of profit are you making for your company with your work? And the second thing, the second part of that, is user understanding. So doing those deep ethnographical studies, understanding who the people are that you're making these things for, what do they don't want to do, is really, actually sometimes it's more important what people don't want to do than what they want to do. And then taking all those cumbersome tasks away from them and giving them pathways to success to whatever they're trying to accomplish with your software.
I see. And for a better understanding, could you walk us through the design process steps that typically take place when designing either hardware or software products?
I think I look at design from point of view of user research. That's sort of how I think about this. And there's two like big sort of phases of user research. One is discovery or explorative user research, where you sort of don't really know what's going on and you need to kind of get the lay of the land and understand the terrain. You have a lot more questions than answers. And then the second part of that would be validative, or sort of like you're testing now, you're testing your hypothesis, you're honing in onto a solution. So that's the second part of user research. And usually these two big phases are what the process is. Now, how long they last sometimes depends on the size of a project, but a lot of times designers have to start with asking questions before the answers start coming. And a lot of those questions asking is anything from like, what problem are we solving? What benefit is what we're solving is to the user? What do we know about these people? What don't we know about these people? And kind of develop that and then go from there. Now, there's all sorts of different frameworks that I've seen used for using this. I'll name just a few. Like, there's design sprint framework, which basically proposes the fact that you don't have to solve problems for months and months and months on hand. They believe if you bring the right people to the table and have a clearly defined problem, you can come to really, really solid solution in just 5 days. So that's kind of like that really sort of expedited process. But then you have design thinking, which kind of takes you through those like 5-6 phases of like definition of the problem, then crafting a solution, testing it, finalizing, and so on. So that's kind of that process. Then you have like the double, triple diamond, where the first part is again dedicated to like are we doing the right thing, and the second part of that is dedicated to how do we do the thing now we know that we need to do right. So that's where sort of more design and engineering comes into play. So a lot of different processes, but for very, very simple terms, is teasing the unknowns, and then actually validating hypotheses that come out of that first process is truly there. There's several other things that I think maybe we forget about, is once the thing is released, whatever that thing is, you need to keep an eye on it. You need to understand, have you missed anything? A lot of times, yeah, you probably did. Things got cut for scope and timeline reasons. Understanding how a thing is surviving in the market, any user complaints. So sometimes you have to rely on your support team, sales team, do more and more user research just to see like what is what you built actually solving the problems you set out to solve. So especially when it comes to mass usage, if you're testing something with like 50 to 100 people in your beta testing, like whatever tiny little problems you're seeing, they're going to get exponentially larger once you expand your scope of usage. So I think designer also, sometimes we forget about that sort of tail end part of it, because you want to be done. But as one of my managers used to say, we're never done as UX designers. So
I see. And in your opinion, within those design processes, where do you think AI holds the most value?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I've been through this process so many times, but I think there's space for AI in almost everything. So, for example, we are currently using a research platform for interview summarizing. So, that qualitative research that uses AI for summarizing findings, which is really interesting. And our survey platform also uses AI for summarizing findings. So, it takes out that sort of manual work that you need to do to transcribe, tag, and then get the actual value out of interviews and surveys you proposed. But as you notice, and as we're all noticing, AI only take you so far. And there's that like last 10, 15% of thinking, of nuance, of sophistication that it seems like we're always going to have to bring to the table as humans that are still in the loop of this process. So even in the beginning in research, there's place for AI. And then the tools we're using, I know like FigJam, who's the other side of Figma, the collaborative side of Figma, has a kind of an AI product that they tap into OpenAI's API and then use that sort of generative language model to basically, like you're just like, hey, summarize my sticky notes, and then it gives you a summary. But as we experienced at the beginning of this interview, when you try to summarize something, it loses its flavor. It loses that sort of human touch that still needs to be there. So I am proceeding with caution with all the AI tools that I use when doing this. Another thing that something that I haven't really paid attention to since I've been outside of advertising and marketing and video editing and so on, but there's a lot of content creation opportunities with AI when it comes to video, graphics, photography, and so on. Just the fact that you can select a section on your photo in Photoshop, and AI is smart enough to fill it up with something that's actually doesn't look like stamped clouds that we used to do back in the day and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like speeding designers up, doing that sort of lower level tasks that we need to do. And then I feel like that is the most obvious value currently, that with the tools that we have. For example, I was in Canva the other day and I was testing their AI module, which is basically spits out like branding, website, everything you need for like whatever product. So I asked for like elegant French bakery design. And it came back with something that like looks legit, but again lacks soul. So there's a little bit of that that I'm seeing as well.
I see. And my next question was tied up exactly to what you just mentioned. Do you believe that there is an element of UX design that AI may never conduct as effectively as a human?
You know, it's hard to say never, you know, from this point of view. I mean, I, as everybody else, can only see what we see currently. I'm going back to a quote that I've seen a long time ago saying, like, AI will not replace you, a person using AI will. And I think that's very, very true, at least for right now. I think there's a level of human innovation that, there is no algorithm and code, no matter like how you can make it some sort of like neurological connections in those like artificial thoughts. I feel like human soul, whatever that is, and I obviously I am not an expert in this field at all, but there's like a soul element that like is really, really hard to replace. And we also have a good mechanism in ourselves to recognize when that's missing in things. No matter how close they are to reality, anytime I played on like Midjourney to create art, there's little nuances that we pick up as human beings that you just like, ooh, this is artificial, this is not real. And I played with like different like TikTok filters and all this other stuff, and there's definite sort of painted on like painted on quality that lives at all this. Now, is AI going to keep getting better and eliminating this? Absolutely. I think once you send an algorithm out there and it's learning on a huge like samples of data, obviously these nuances get smaller and smaller, but I don't think that gap is ever going to be fully covered. At least I'm kind of hoping not to. I feel like taking that sort of layer of human creativity, is, I don't want to say dangerous, but it would be sad. It would be sad to like, instead of like for us to accept this and have AI replace that, I think we need to evolve as a creative community and as a creative species to actually, again, see AI as tools and then up our creativity and strategic thinking, or whatever that is. Like for engineers, it's engineering, architecture, and systems thinking, and just keep elevating ourselves as thinkers and makers versus like have AI do that part for us.
One of the elements of UX design is thus a user-centric approach with designing. So do you think that will be possible with AI to have this user-centric approach, and how do we find this balance?
I mean, there's several ways you can kind of think about it. The natural language helps with this, definitely. So you feel like you're just typing in a question and sending it to ChatGPT, and Oracle is giving you an answer you can interpret as human. I think that was a huge step to just get there. So that's kind of like if you're designing tools, or if you're incorporating AI tools into whatever you're building, having that sort of human touch to them is definitely going to stay and should stay there to keep sort of that dialogue going. Now, when it comes to like user research and all the dots we need to connect from our customers and our users when they're using our product, that sort of translation. Again, as I mentioned, AI could help you summarize, could help you kind of pull insights out of large sets of data. However, when it comes to like applying that cross-functionally, connecting the dots between you and other team members, I don't see any replacement for that yet. That's still sort of something that relies on conversation and like humans being together and collaborating together. I don't know. That's another one that would make me sad if it's ever replaced, you know, if that sort of like human touch, the fact that I need to go and talk to the product marketing manager so we can talk about how we're actually selling whatever AI component we're building in our software is like, I don't want to lose that. I think that's very, very important. Systems don't, like, I have not seen anything at that layer of thinking yet, but that could be next, you know, like that is absolutely, there's people way smarter than me working on how we can keep iterating on whatever we have at AI currently. So I hope that answers that question.
I'm very interested to hear your opinion about my next question. Do you worry that relying too much on generative AI and UX design, especially for young designers, might stifle creativity and impede their growth? And are there any concerns about finding the right balance between AI assistance and fostering personal creative development?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I remember when AI conversations just started maybe about a year ago or so, like I saw a meme somewhere saying AI will only replace designers when clients develop clear requirements. So anytime you're working with the client, you know, and the person on the other side tells you like, well, I don't know what I want. Like, just give me something so I can react to it. I think that potentially that layer of thinking could definitely be used. I would highly recommend to young designers to use these tools, but don't like delegate your own thinking to a tool and use it to inspire, use it to iterate for you, use it sort of as sort of your mass producer, but at the end really converge on what the point or what problem is your design solving, or like what point is it making, or if it's a brand, like what story is it telling customer. And having that story be innovative and out there, and you may have to get out in the real world and not have to basically have an algorithm solve this problem for you. I do think definitely, like if I was somebody who does not understand, you know, design and has no access to a designer, and they just want to like, I want to create a website and a logo for my flower shop, I would definitely go to Canva and use those tools, crank out all of my materials, have it write my social posts and kind of do that. But you may learn pretty soon that sort of optimization, depending on a very nuanced feedback or what you're seeing or analytics, is sort of, it may still require human intervention. So as somebody, so I was listening to the latest podcast with Inbal Shani, who is, I think she's a CPO of GitHub, and she's talking about how AI and actual product development, so engineering, how those two interact. And she said that human is like, we are never going to take human out of the loop. It's just that human is need to develop different set of skills and maybe higher level skills, and then delegate the lower level skills to AI.
I see. So like a little personal assistant or some kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So not losing your own creativity with AI, because there's definite magic in tinkering with things and like moving things around and playing around, that human imagination, I don't know, and I hope it's not replicated to that degree yet. So I don't know if AI was invented, 100 years ago, if it would have given us Picasso or somebody who really started breaking up like how we see the world, if that level of innovation, where you're thinking ahead or questioning state of humanity, and I think that can translate into what we do to some level, is ever going to be replaced with artificial intelligence.
That's great insights. I would like to talk about now design tools, and have the tools you use already incorporated AI elements or features, and do you see this becoming the standard for the industry?
I think yes, but whenever I talk to people that like either have these tools implemented or using them, they're always like, there's a lot of skepticism actually in product world about this, of like, okay, we just say like, oh, we have AI in our product, but what does it mean? What problem does it solve? What value does it bring? Are you just saying it so you just are sort of following the trend, but it has no real meaning? So anybody that has incorporated any type of AI could tell you the same thing. I think great example of this would be FigJam, using OpenAI's API to like summarize things, basically being able to create a whole design on a simple language prompt. So you can say, I need a homepage, a pricing structure page, and a contact us page. Can you design this for me? And then you would get something as an end result, a great starting point. But I think as designers, we still need to optimize this, make it look and function properly as we see fit. So I don't think once AI is sort of done with it, or prompt you've given them, you can sort of be like, okay, I'm done. There's a lot more work there. But then in that sense, you can think about this as like, it's a lower level task that I'm just giving to the tool that I'm using. And then I can build on it with my own talents and input as this go on. I know other tools like Notion has an AI module. GitHub also has a copilot that helps engineers write code. And then also one thing that at my new job, there's several designers where they do like Midjourney challenges where you basically are creating art with your prompts. I don't know if you had a chance to mess around with Midjourney, but some really, really funny things and interesting things are coming out of there. So we play a game, I guess, at my new job, they play a game where they like duel between themselves creating art for prompts. So I think people are also having fun with AI. It is not all scary and kind of like it's going to take our jobs, but having fun and actually exploring these tools is a lot of fun too.
That's amazing. I'm glad it's all not gloomy and terrifying regarding AI. next, I would really want to talk about a quandary I have in regards with design and ethics. When it comes to being a designer, of course, we know that creativity is key. So should designers disclose when they have AI in their work? Are there any ethical guidelines for being transparent about AI's role in creative outcomes?
You know, that's very interesting. I have not had a personal experience where lines had to be drawn. But I think we can definitely assume anything created today potentially could have an AI component at some point of their work. So if you use, generative AI to create you an outline of a character, but then you illustrated a book with that character and use a lot of your own design afterwards, like, where does AI stop and where do you begin as a creative person? And then like, how's that different from like, I don't know, finding a source of a photo somewhere on internet and using that instead and so on. So that's sort of like, I feel like these problems are not new. So we had this constantly from, you know, from people in educational institutions, students, for example, like that sort of like plagiarism problem that pops up. And for example, my son wrote a story at school and he promises, so I trust him, I guess, that he did not use AI to write a summary of a story, but his teacher ran it through some other AI robot to decide if the story was written on another robot. And it told her it was 95% sure that the story he submitted as his own was written by AI. And then he had to like rewrite it again to make sure it doesn't sound like that. So it is very interesting, like how and where this shows up. And it's something that we're going to keep an eye on. But then also, like, it may be where you may get what you pay for, too. So if you pay somebody for really, really think through your design, your user experience, and you have some really specific problems you're solving, AI will probably not be the best suited for that. You're going to have somebody who thinks in systems, who thinks about like nuanced user problems, and it can only kind of solve them that way. So,
and staying on the topic of ethics, how do ethical considerations come into play when designing with AI in terms of user privacy and data security? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think ethics like don't change with like AI being here. Like one thing that was interesting as I was reading about FigJam and Figma using OpenAI to kind of fuel their natural language module is they had to promise their users, so whatever you're typing in there is not going to be used to train the OpenAI algorithm at the like other end. So thinking about privacy of companies, like what they're solving, and how if you're plugging into some other API, how there's ethics of like using that information to train your algorithms. I am not a privacy or data security expert at all. Like I usually just do whatever people tell me to do that are experts in this field. I think the ethical consideration are maybe more intense or interesting when it comes to social media and media in general, where you can do a lot of misrepresentation of facts using AI. And that's kind of where the scary stuff is, where like one scary part of it is like people believing everything they see, but the flip side of that is people believing nothing that they see, which then sort of pacifies people out of action and makes everything that we hear and see out there seem unreal. So I think those are the truly like ethics and reporting and journalism, and then also social media, anything from like beauty products. I mean, you could fake pretty much the whole spiel about whatever with help of tools today, and being a conscious consumer and being somebody who knows to like being media literate and knowing how to check where things are coming from is also gonna fall for us. So like I hope AI actually makes us smarter and more sort of give us tools to research things better and make us like more creative, more intelligent, more thoughtful citizens is sort of my optimistic take on where this is all going, but I could be wrong.
And with the growing popularity of user experience design, many aspiring young designers are eager to break into this field. However, some may be discouraged or fearful about the longevity of their career in the face of the recent AI revolution. So what advice or insights would you offer to these individuals, and how do you see the role of UX designers evolving in the context of ongoing advancement in artificial intelligence?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you chose the path of UX design as sort of your career, one advice, no matter what, like, it's the same advice you would have gotten, you know, 20 years ago as today, is like, don't be complacent. Be always on a lookout of what's coming behind the corner and then learn about how to be proficient in that new thing. One thing that, you know, I've noticed is like the technology and tools have changed. We all had to like pivot one way to or another. Like at some point it was truly like the most important thing is like, how can you code these visual experiences so they show up on everybody's computer? So today is like, how can you as a designer think about just scanning something, using that scanned data, feeding it into this and then spitting it out to a user? Those are two completely different skill sets. So as a UX designer, you need to be willing and actually excited the fact that you're never truly going to be an expert. And the second you start feeling comfortable is the second you should wonder like, oh, what am I missing? So it may be a little bit of a paranoid way to live, but it's fun. And don't let the times and new technologies scare you and kind of run you by. One thing that like Brian Chesky, who's the founder or his co-founder of Airbnb, he has a very interesting points of view about the world. And one of the things that he said was, if designers don't embrace AI, the world will be designed without them. Very, very scary sort of proposition, but it's actually embracing it, jumping into it, not being scared to make mistakes, and always learning and so on. So not giving away our power, I think, is very, very important. Now, longevity of your career is equally proportional to how willing you are to change and embrace change. If you want to stay in this field forever, who knows what we're going to have, you know, 10 years from now, and like how you're going to have to adopt what you know and potentially like retire whole skill sets and develop new ones. Engineers also have gone through this same thing, going from, you know, developing websites in PHP, like that nobody does that anymore. I know engineers that like invested a lot in like WordPress sites design and management. Nobody really does that anymore. Now it's all about React and like Python and so on. So like engineers also. So if you're living in tech, you're constantly seeing even types of jobs that you do go back, resurface, disappear, something new appears, and so on. So I don't know if you read the State of UX in 2023. I'll send you the article there, but they summarize all of this stuff. The basically TLDR is like as again, things are changing. So they have like State of UX, I think dating as far as 2016. So you can see all the patterns for, you know, eight years or however long to see kind of like what we thought was happening. I think United States was really, really sort of shaken up with all the layoffs right now. If you look at the companies, what they're hiring, not a lot of people are hiring entry-level designers. It's all, you know, you have to be senior and above. So it really, really like it's sort of like what they call a post-capitalist or post-UX. So we're living in like high specialization and monetization part of what we do. So being able to speak the business language, understand language of profit, understanding strategy and business strategy, understanding user research, and kind of doubling down on those things that like AI can't really do for you, I think is sort of the theme that I'm seeing with engineers as well, demands to be more architecturally or system thinking like. So we constantly have to evolve. And a lot of times it takes like reading articles until midnight, like I do, just to sort of understand, like, what is this new world that I'm in, and how can I jump into it without hesitation? So I, you know, like longevity of career, you're going to have, this is now, something else is going to come right around the corner. And advice is keep your eyes open and embrace the fact that you're an expert in a fact that you never know enough. So learn forever is my message there.
I love that last message. But thank you, Jacob, so much for this insightful and interesting conversation. I'm sure our listeners, and among them maybe even designers, will really find valuable takeaways from our discussion. Thank you so much for being guests on Future Voices.
Yeah, absolutely. It was my pleasure. And I love talking to you, Zahra. This is so much fun to talk about, and I'm excited to see, like, in a year from now, if we do a check-in to see what all we have learned and and what happened to UX design. And the next year, I think it's going to be a very exciting year for all of us.